My name is Laurens Jacht, and welcome to Cybersecurity Talks, the interview podcast for cybersecurity professionals and for those who aspire to become one. Join us on our journey and learn about the latest trends, real-life war stories, and everything you need to know about this fascinating industry. Today, we have a very special edition of Cybersecurity Talks. We're sitting live in the second podcast studio at Cisco's headquarters in Amsterdam. So this is a very cool event, and this is also the first time we do a live podcasting. So I'm very, very excited and grateful that we can be here, thanks to Cisco. But I'm most excited that I'm sitting down with you today, Richard. You were also one of the presenters during the second event, so that's really cool that we can have you on the show. Richard is a public speaker, he's a blogger, he's a cybersecurity author, he's been in the field for, I think, more than 30 years by now, so it's very exciting to sit down with you. I do admire your blogs, I do admire your books, I want to dive into your latest book that just went live on Amazon, So we have a lot to discuss. And I will also make sure to put show notes to all your blogs and your books, because I really recommend people to check those out. So welcome. It's an honor.
Thank you. Yeah, my personal mission in life is make the world a little bit more cyber safe. And I do this via blogging, via public speaking, and nowadays also via writing my third book.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm curious about your experience as an author. But before jumping into my questions, a brief summary of your career. Because you started as an accountant, which I find very special.
Well, it is special in this note. 30 years ago, I finished my financial education. And the day after I finished, I jumped into the IT world. But having a financial background always helped me in various conversations with management, because it is always about money. And then speaking their language helps. And that's a trait which I learned also over the years. I speak both languages, both the management language, but also the technical language. And if you can do that, you're really special. Because I know a lot of really good IT person. They are good in speaking tech. They are not good in speaking technical or management.
Yeah, it's hard to find both.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's something we need more, because security is already really complicated. And if you can't communicate, you can't get things moving to the right way. The philosophy which I'm using is I want to move away from doing the disco. So security department versus the rest of the company. And I want to move to a model which is more like the tango. We do it together. But that means you need to communicate.
Takes two to tango.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, very, very interesting. I want to know more about it. But before that, because I saw you started as an accountant and then you jumped into IT. Mm-hmm. But I think you've been a system admin, then you've been a network admin, then you became an ethical hacker, a vulnerability scanner, a SIEM specialist, a security architect. You worked with Allende, with IBM. Now you work for Tata Steel. You've seen so many different fields. Mm-hmm. I think I never met a person that had so many different job titles within security. How come? Are you that curious?
Yes, I am. It's always, since I was born, I was always curious. When I was a young child, I had my toys, I ripped them apart to see how they worked and put them together. In the beginning, of course, nothing worked, but that's how I learned, and that's how my curiosity started in everything. And it's also when I was a little child, and even nowadays, I love playing games on game consoles, on computers, whatever. But then I figured out that if I edit the save game, I can boost, my health in the game. So I can, it's kind of cheating, but that's my first entry into the hacking world.
That was maybe your first experience with cybersecurity.
Yes, it was.
Hacking your own games.
And especially in the old days, I'm talking about early 2000s, and the serial numbers of products were really simple. It was just a mathematical calculation, but really simple. Nowadays it's much more complicated, but back then they said, okay, Richard, I need a serial number. With a bit of guessing, you knew how the system was working, and you had your own serial codes. Nowadays it's more complicated, but that's also the industry is evolving, which is good, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, there's a long way to go.
Yep.
And out of all the roles I just mentioned, What is the job function that you enjoyed most?
It's kind of a combi. I love being on the blue side, being the defender. But one of my other philosophy is, if you are a defender, you need to have 20% of red blood in you. You need to do the hacking also. If you can't hack, you don't know how they work. And then you don't know how to read what is on your screen.
Okay. And how can a blue teamer get that red experience?
Doing it. Go to CTF camps. If you are a technical OCP, play with system, be curious. Go to Black Hat, all those kinds of things. Just really be curious.
Yeah. Yeah, because we speak with a lot of professionals that have a similar background, not as an accountant, but as a system admin or a software developer. They ask us, how do I get into the field? But everybody wants to become a pen tester because that sounds the most sexy. But I feel that's also the most difficult starting job for a security professional.
It is, but what a lot of people are forgetting, if you are a pen tester, 90% or 99% of what you do will fail. And that's something you need to be able to handle. Because everybody thinks, yes, I break a firewall, I'm in, I'm there. That's really the 0.001%. The rest is hard work. Do your research, do your education, and really dig into the dirty details. But that is not sexy. But everybody thinks, hey, I do presenting at a Black Hat. But that's for the very happy few.
Okay, I want to challenge you. How sexy is it industry? Somebody being in it for 30 years?
It is. Most functions are really good, but you need to be. You need to know yourself what you really like, because basically there are two camps, the defender side and the offensive side. But even if in the red side, it's also really good. You have people who are hacking your Apple devices or your Android devices. Some people are really good at playing with firewalls in such a way that they automatically phone home. Therefore, everybody is something out there. But it is something you need to find for yourself what you like.
Yeah.
Because I've been on both sides, and I like more the blue side, the defensive side, because I like that my day is unpredictable. I don't mind being called by an analyst at 4 o'clock in the night, Richard, we have an incident. But I love the adrenaline that comes with it. But that's also something you need to be able to handle, because if you have a major incident, the adrenaline is high, the pressure is high. And I have seen people burn out because of that. But it's something, especially for those who are going to this industry, be curious, do a little bit of taste testing, be 6 months this role, 6 months that role, and find out for yourself what you like. That's the only way, A, to survive in this game, but B, to learn what you like.
I want to go a bit deeper on what you said, because most people that I know that have to be on call, they can get frustrated if they have to leave the phone on during the weekend. Mm-hmm. But are you saying that maybe on a Saturday night, 4 o'clock, your phone rings, then you're like, boom, okay, let's go. I'm in need.
Yep. That's the stuff which I like. There is one condition which I always say, I don't come for the small stuff. I only do the big stuff. Because then I know when I get called, it's immediately a major one.
Yeah, cool.
And my family or friends, they already know Richard has a 24/7 function. Not the first time that they leave in the middle of the dinner something happened.
And can you give an example of a case that you really get that dopamine shot from, without mentioning too many company details, but just to get a taste?
I have plenty. In the early days when I was a system admin, we had the Anna Kournikova virus at the company, or the printer viruses. Then you need to clean the entire network all over the weekend. Later, I dealt with major DDoS attacks at financial institutes. I had my fair share of ransomware, so name it, mostly I had it already.
Okay. And you also mentioned your family briefly. How well aware are they of what you're doing? So you have that gimmick that people say, this is what my friends think, this is what my parents think I'm doing, this is what my girlfriend thinks I'm doing. But do they know what you're actually doing on a day-to-day basis, or you keep it a mystery?
It's kind of in the middle. Partly because I do a lot of social stuff and I want to control what I do and what's being said out there. So I keep it in the middle what I'm really doing. They know that I do something in security, mostly on the defensive side. And they also know that I'm from time to time, I am an hacker.
Okay. But your neighbor is clearly not aware of what you do, probably.
No, they don't.
Okay, let's keep it that way. Mm-hmm. Now, interesting, and I'm also, from my own curiosity, very interested because you write blogs. I already gave you a compliment before because I love that you're very consistent with the blog posting. Every week you post something, but also your third book is now out. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to learn more about it, but also the process of writing a book. How is this? I can imagine it's also lonely and can be dreading, but how was it for you?
It is. This whole blogging and booking element actually started during Corona. Everybody had way too much time, me too. And I decided, okay, I have way too much knowledge in me, and keeping it all for myself, that's not me. I want to share everything what I know with people out there. So I started Tales from Obscurity and trained by security professional blog channels. And I just basically try to publish at least once a week something on security with a really easy tone in it, not really complicated, but just to raise awareness. Hey, did you think about, for example, vulnerability management or the blue side, just to raise everything. I do the blogging completely in English because Dutch is just too small. We are just with a small country in this world. If I do it in English, my outreach is, well, the entire world.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
And if I see my audience, I have people coming from Australia, from all the continents, they're all watching my blogs, they are responding to it.
Yeah, and with the book, because it sort of half fiction / half non-fiction, or how should I see that?
All the books which are brought out there, they're officially fiction title series, but they have elements which can happen in the real world. Mostly of the books are based on my own experience and doing the research. Yes, sometimes there is a little exaggeration in it, but it is doable.
And can I see it sort of as the black mirror of cybersecurity?
Not necessarily. If I take, for example, from Oops, I Did It Again, that's a book from how an attacker really works. The attacker hacked the bank and did something, and okay, he got caught in the end. Spoiler alert. But you see the mindset, what he does, and the entire flow. If I take my second book from The Maiden's Flight, it is actually the other side of the equation, this defensive side. Hey, they see stuff happening on the network and they get curious and they follow the trail and find out they've been breached. My third book is actually from, if you follow all the big APT groups out there, you can basically see the Cold War, but in a really modern age. That's the third book.
Okay. And after you launch your first book, because maybe you set some goals, like I wanted to sell this many copies, but how is it then? You press send, or you say, okay, let's go live. What happens the days and weeks after that?
It's basically the same stuff that happened when you do you publish the podcast, you press the button send, it's out there, and then you just wait.
Yeah, you feel vulnerable, you feel like legend. What happens?
It is both, actually. It is both. You're vulnerable because you put your opinion out there and people will have an opinion about it. That's something you need to learn with. But you're also really proud, especially when I hit the first book, when I got the go-ahead from my publisher, from VRCon, to publish your book. It is a moment of proudness.
Yeah.
Because everybody in my family, nobody knew I was doing it. And I only announced, from guys, my first book is out there.
And now we're, say, 2 years after COVID, and mm-hmm. the third book is out. I think you're a quick writer.
Well, thanks to ChatGPT.
Be careful.
There is, ChatGPT has a really big benefit. Of course, I need to do the majority of the writing, but ChatGPT helped me, for example, with making it more better in words and style. It helps you with English and that sort of stuff. It doesn't write a book because that's basically cheating, but it really helps the story.
Okay, nice. I wasn't aware that that authors use this tool already. Yeah, but it makes sense also with the translation from Dutch to English, or just fine tuning everything.
If you follow the current strike by the authors community in the USA, they strike because of ChatGPT. Because they are afraid of, hey, who's doing my job now?
Yeah.
And I can understand it, but this is, thanks to the modern age, things are changing. and everybody needs to get used to it, and things do need to evolve.
And to jump on that topic maybe a little bit, how do you see this cybersecurity landscape changing? Because you've been in the field, as we said, a long time, but this could really be a major game changer.
It is, and I've seen it already happening. Phishing emails being written by ChatGPT in really good Dutch or in English. So it is becoming now even more and more difficult for the normal audience to figure out, is this a normal email or is this phishing email? Technology, I haven't seen it yet that they can detect it. At least there's something out there, but it is really scarce. And we need to be aware of it, that this ChatGPT is coming. But also, and then more speaking about a little bit more bigger with machine learning and AI, AI is also coming. And then if you're then hit by an AI bot, can you handle it? The volume, the speedness? Because the whole game you need to play is how fast you can contain the fire. With an AI attack bot, you can be fully breached in 10 minutes. Can your defense organization be, are they able to contain the incident in 10 minutes? If not, it's game over.
But how realistic is that?
It is.
The 10 minutes is almost impossible, right? To seal everything.
It shouldn't be. If you have the right philosophy in your architecture, you have the right technology out there, and there is really good equipment. Also, Cisco are selling it. It can help you contain incidents. Because once you have contained it, it becomes a business problem. So in case, okay, the server is down, how long can we survive without the server? That's a business problem. But if the server is on fire, you really need to be able to contain it.
And with AI, do you see it as a headache? Like, okay, there's new technology. Like, we have to change things. We have to think about it. Or do you also see like, okay, cool, there's something new. There's innovation from both sides.
It is both. From my defense point of view, I see some really big benefits coming. With your traditional source solution, you can already respond quite quickly. But when you have the more complicated incident, you still need the human part. And then AI can help. But then on the other side, our adversaries, they're also know that AI is coming. And they are playing with it.
Big time.
Yeah.
And do you see that happening already? You mentioned phishing, but do you see other more sophisticated attacks that you never encountered before?
Yeah, I follow various digital forensics blog channels, and you see AI is out there. You see what's happening. And the benefit of following digital forensics reports is, okay, it's after the breach, but you can see how fast things are happening. On the digital forensic report, which I last time was reading, the entire incident took 1 hour.
Yeah, that's bad for business.
It wasn't game over for that. I saw last week in the news an article that a UK transport company went broke because they were hit by ransomware and they couldn't survive. So you need, and that's also more to the senior management, be ready when it happens. Make sure that you have a plan B. And if you are hit, for example, by a major ransomware, you can react and you can recover.
And this is also one of your blogs. I think it's titled, it's not if, but when. Yep. Sort of, it's only a matter of time before you get hacked. But is your philosophy more than, okay, we know it's going to happen, but we just have to be prepared?
It is, if you have budget, 80% should be on defense side, that you can prevent it from happening. But you should also should invest on elements that, okay, it will happen, from now what? For example, if you don't invest in a good backup solution, if you are hit by a ransomware, well, your only solution is pay or go bankrupt.
Yeah, but with a sort of a conglomerate as your current employer, DataSteel, the stakes are high, that there are a lot of people working for the organization. How does the conversation then go? Because a lot of it is also budget. You're sort of a CISO advisor. How would you manage these type of conversations if you say, look, it's going to happen. So what are we going to do about it? They might say, okay, but you're in charge to not make it happen.
Yeah, but that's your normal risk conversation. Okay, what is the likelihood that something will happen and what's the impact? And then it's just okay, if you know that the impact is big, what's the budget? You need to contain it. And this really simple equation from if you're need $10 to contain something and the impact is $1 million, it's an easy game. But if the impact is $10 and you need $1 billion, you know that you will lose the conversation with management.
Yeah.
But then you need to plan B. From, okay, if I can't fix it, can I at least detect it?
So it's at the end of the day, it's business. Your accounting skills come
yep.
come back in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Now, yeah, interesting. And with Tata Steel, for instance, is there already new projects that you guys look what's going on in the artificial intelligence space, and are there also blue teamers already using it?
You know that I really can't talk about the current employee, but if I see with other employees, everybody's busy with something.
Yeah, all blue teamers have to step it up.
Yep.
Yeah, cool. I think that's a good thing. Looking back at your career so far, what are you most proud of? Is it the on your personal title, the blog, the books, or is it an incident that you recovered of as a training young professionals?
Most proudly about training the young professionals out there that they can reach their next level. Because I see them always as a rough diamond. You need to polish them so that they can go wherever they want to go.
What's the best advice you have for the next generation?
Be curious, because that's always my judge, the thing where I judge them. If I see curiosity in the people, I will offer them a job. If I don't see them and they're kind of stubborn, sorry, but I will not offer you a job.
How do you measure this curiosity?
It is a very simple question, and it is basically asking from how many ways do you know to turn off a light? If you're closed-minded, you are mostly with a low number of answers. Open-minded people with a lot of curiosity will reach the high numbers. It's also a hacker's question, but you can easily think about how to turn off the light.
I'm feeling kind of challenged and stupid right now. Thank you. But
it is also the fun conversation, because then you get to know people. Because if you're really thinking, based on the body language, you can see if they are closed-minded or open-minded.
Yeah.
I'm also, when I do job interviews, I also use the social hacking skills to see what kind of people it is I have in front of me.
Yeah.
And body language tells a lot.
Yeah. I'm starting to blush now. I'm curious, how many ways are there then? Just to give an indication, that probably unlimited amount of numbers, but I would maybe on a very good day reach 2 or 3, something like that.
At least 10.
Yeah. Okay.
Like the most obvious is just go to the light switch and turn it off.
Yeah, but turn the electricity completely off.
Yeah, or you just destroy the building, put the building on fire.
Smash the lamp.
Or be creative, nuke the entire city, EMP blast, you name it.
Okay. But it's more a hacker's question then, I guess. Yeah.
But this is how it tests curiosity.
Do you have other challenging interview questions that you would like to ask?
Well, the one thing which I never ask to my young colleagues, what is your career ambition? I always ask, what do you want to learn? Because that will also show curiosity, and it kind of hints towards their direction they want to take. And what I also usually do when they just started, I just gave them a random assignment, which is basically always a mission to fail, but it will show character of the person. How fast are they reaching out to me, Richard? What you're now asking is just mission impossible. But sometimes they also surprise me with some, yes, I did it. And I'm looking at them, yeah, that was a very creative solution.
So you're kind of tough.
Yeah.
You like to challenge them, make their life a little hard.
I want to know the person. And it's giving them a tough challenge helps.
And what's the best advice you ever received from when you were just starting in the field?
Know your circle of influence. Because and that helps also with dealing with disappointment, because you know that you need to do a lot of things. And you're upset with a lot of things because how people work in the company. But if you can't influence them, just don't get upset. It will only help destroy yourself. Like now I'm in a position where I can do a lot of influences, but there are still things which I can't do. But then I need to find a different way to do it.
Do you need to be patient in this industry?
Yeah. Because things go at, as you call it, the heartbeat of the company. And you need to learn how to recognize it. Some companies, and I'm talking more the modern companies, they are quite quickly, they adapt because they know the industry. But if you have a more traditional kind of industry, they are slow to adapt. Only during crisis and incident, everything is really easy because then you can things get done quickly.
That's the most exciting part.
Yeah. And then you need to make sure that you can really push a lot of things at the into the company. At the moment the incident is over or more in a contained phase, the pressure is off and people are starting going, no, I don't like this, do something else.
For I think young professionals to get to that level where you can work on incident response cases, that's next to being a CISO, what a lot of people would love to become. It's the most exciting. That's the stuff you probably read in books or see in the movies. But you don't start there. So you had a very, in that sense, a bit odd career, starting as an accountant, mm-hmm. then system admin, network admin, all sorts of jobs. And now you've became a person that is on speed dial. But is there a different way? Is there a quicker way to get to such a level?
Yeah, but it's there. Yes, there are quick ways. But the first thing you need to ask yourself, do I want to become the CISO? Because being the CISO, it's a very small world. There are not enough positions out there to become a CISO. And you need to handle the political environment because that's being a CISO. I took the extreme long route. I started all the way at the bottom and worked myself way up in 30 years. But yes, there are quicker ways. If you work in a SOC, you have your traditional tier model. You start as a junior and you grow. If you have organized it good within your company, you know that after when you are a senior analyst, you can go, for example, to the threat hunting team or the threat intelligence team or to the use case team, because then you show as a company a career path. If you don't show it, I can guarantee you already your people will leave you, because especially in a SOC, things are repetitive and boring. And especially if you are in a junior position, you have to grave and the night shift, it is difficult and boring. But okay, thanks to technology, you can make life also fun again.
But I want to challenge you a bit on that, because a lot of juniors, they sort of have to start in the SOC level one role. Mm. And we all know that there's a high demand for security professionals. But if you then start in a SOC and you have weird shifts and it's super repetitive, talent that would like to join the industry starts. And I see it happening after 1 year. They said, I gave it a shot, but I'm out. This is not for me. It's not as sexy as I thought it would be. So you lose talent mm-hmm. while there's already a shortage of talent. So and how can we battle this?
I don't blame them. I think the industry itself is failing to recognize this repetitive burden. But it is also about the companies. They also should recognize this, because there are solutions out there to really reduce the repetitive work out there. But it is also, as a company, you should trust technology and automation. And that's scary, because everybody thinks about the Terminator movie, the machines will terminate you. And that shouldn't be.
But that's AI, that is Terminator, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what everybody is afraid about. And if you do it in a really controlled manner, you can move to a much more automated way of life without really elevating your risk.
And then it could become more fun for professionals. Yeah. But that's the challenge. I feel that the technology is something good and something bad. So the more technology, the more the blue teamers have to work again to fight that. So it's never ending.
True, but the biggest problem is the people upstairs in the company, the senior management. Most of the time, they are the older generations. They are not trained with computers when they were at school, and they got it into the labs, and now you are responsible as a CIO for the technology. Deal with it. And it takes another, I think, 10, 20 years when we see a more modern and aged CIO who knows technology and use technology to his advantage.
But you're from the generation below, but you said you need to ask yourself, do I want to become CISO or CIO. So maybe then there is the people that have the tech knowledge, but they say, I want to stay away from that the political game. That's not for me. And you also say, I love to have that incident response, that I have to dive into forensics and really get going.
Yeah, I love the technology. I don't like the political nature of certain functions.
Yeah.
And therefore, I will never accept the role as a CISO.
But is it not inevitable as you grow on the cybersecurity corporate ladder that politics become a bigger part?
It is.
With each promotion?
Yeah. The more high you come, politicals will become a bigger challenge. But if you are more in a tech advisory role, you can avoid the political dance quite good.
Okay, that's good to know.
But at the same, again, if you are at the higher positions, you need to have political skills in you.
Yeah. Now I wanna close this part, but I want to ask you, because you're quite active in kind of leaving a legacy. At the end of your career, what would make you feel I succeeded? I have a legacy. I feel like I did it. I changed things in the industry for the better.
That I made the world a little bit more cyber safe, because that's my entire mission at the moment. It's working, but that is also my legacy.
Is it then mainly through knowledge sharing at this point in your career?
At the moment, I choose knowledge sharing, but maybe in the future I will choose a different model. But at the moment, knowledge sharing is working.
On that note, the question that I really like to ask in terms of knowledge sharing is if there's one signal message that you can send to all the CISOs across the world, what would that message state?
That's a challenging question. Get rid of the SLAs.
Can you go deeper on it?
And I've seen it with every company, and also with all the MSSPs out there. They say, we do incident triage within 15 minutes, and then we do incident response in 2 hours. And everybody will usually target to be 80% compliant. So I do at 1 minute, 1 hour, and 30 minutes, I say, okay, incident is contained. But the other part, the incident triage also has an SLA. If you count them all together, and it takes more than 2 hours to contain and resolve an incident, you can already be completely breached by adversary. And that's why you need to move to a more different model, where you do not SLA on a small part of the service, but an SLA on the entire service. So for example, you can say, I want incident containment within 1 hour. I don't care how many parties are in between it, because then you can truly affect and boost the security. But that's a really cultural change.
Yeah, I think you have to really fight for that to become true.
Yep. And especially if you're working in a company with a lot of third-party vendors, dealing with SLAs is challenging.
Yeah, I think it's good to be ambitious, but this is a challenging mission, yeah.
It is, but the way I look at it, it is not challenge is always is nice, but it is more from, okay, let's make the world cyber safe, and we need to address the elephant in the room. SLAs is for compliancy stuff.
I like this, because it's the first time I hear it. We're in the third season, but I never hear anybody say things about the SLA. So that's a nice one, a new learning.
And the way I think about everything is, my head is threat-driven. When I see a security risk out there, I go for it. And SLA, unfortunately, is nowadays also a threat. Because people will say, I reached my targets. No, yeah, but the company is bankrupt. Or patient is dead.
But they committed to the SLA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a challenge indeed.
Mm-hmm. And that is going to be... if you can achieve that as a CISO, you have a really big legacy.
Nice. Yeah. I think that's a good closing statement. But I want to ask you one more question. And this is about what's your favorite experience so far? So the ultimate high you've experienced in your career or not in your career, it can also be on another cybersecurity related topic.
My biggest personal technical achievement is when I was playing with a firewall, and usually say firewalls are there to protect you. And I took in during the pen testing, I took the role as a disgruntled employee. And I said, well, what if I am the firewall admin and configure the firewall a little bit differently? And a very long story in one sentence is I reconfigured the firewall in such a way that I made him an ET from home device. He called to an external site, opened up a shell with system level, and nothing was logged, so nobody knew it. If I say this with the real vendor name, I have a lot of legal issues with me, because when I did the big bounty reporting, they didn't treat it very nicely. They sent the lawyers.
Yeah? Yep. Wow, that's very odd.
It is.
But were you doing this on your own account or from a business account? Were you a consultant?
A business account.
Yeah.
But I followed the big bounty rules. From, okay, I will first report via the official channels. You have your 90 days to fix it, and then I go public. And within some, a really short time, they said, nope, we are not going to allow this that you go public. Here are the lawyers.
Shit.
Yeah.
And what happened next? You had to get your own lawyers or the company lawyers?
No, at that point I decided from this, for me it's not worth the battle. If they don't want to pay out, okay, they don't want to pay out. I'm just not going to do any pen testing for them again.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of vendors, other vendors out there who are willing to pay. So, okay, let's focus on something else.
Yeah.
And that's also stuff that happens in the industry.
But I like it that it was your high, but it almost became like the biggest low. So you like to play a little bit on the on the gray field. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's also being insecure. Nothing is really always black and white. Because in Dutch law, you're basically playing with the Dutch law called computervredebreuk when you're breaching a device. And it's a gray area. We're still waiting for good verdicts of the courts how to read that law. And that's if you are within the Netherlands. But yeah, you know, with the internet, you never know where you are. So it's really difficult to figure out if you are breaching something, am I in Europe? Am I in America? Or am I in Russia?
Yeah, so the law and regulations don't add up anymore.
Now, the first question is, well, which one applies? That's already really challenging to do, because our adversaries, they say, okay, if I'm not allowed to come from Russia, I just move my entire stuff to Europe. Yeah, but are you dealing with a Russian entity or are you dealing with a European entity? And if you do ethical hacking assignments and do bug bounty programs, it is challenging. And that's why I always say, if you want to become an ethical hacking, make sure that you have your get out of jail organized.
And you always had this?
Yeah.
How did you organize this?
I do have some legal friends.
Okay.
But I also make sure that if I'm going to do something, I read on the websites okay, these are the rules.
Yeah. But what you said in the beginning of our conversation is that to be a good security professional, you need to be 80% blue and at least 20% red, probably. Mm-hmm. But this is also the discussion we might have, to be good on the defensive side, you also need to have a bit of the grinchiness and the red inside of you.
It is on both sides. The 80-20% rule applies on both sides. If you're a pen tester, you need to know how the defense is working. If you're on the defensive side, you need to know the offensive stuff. So yep. It is both sides of the equation.
Okay. No, thank you. Looking at the time, I think we need to wrap it up. But what's maybe a closing statement for you that you want to share with the listeners, either here at the event or the people that are watching and listening to this production?
Be curious and learn.
Be curious and learn.
That's my mission already for 30 years.
And it can be both in life and in security.
Yep.
Yeah. No, fantastic.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Richard. It was really a joy.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Cybersecurity Talks. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to review and subscribe. For all further information on our live events and new podcast releases, go to csrecruitment.nl. Thank you and stay safe.